Good morning. Joining me now from somewhere near Heartland, Minnesota, my good friend Al Batt. Hey, Al, how you doing?
I am doing swell. My wife has reminded me that last week I said we were at a venue celebrating the MSU softball team. I didn't realize I said that. It was a basketball team. Although I was looking at the high school. I have a granddaughter plays high school, two of them that play high school softball. So I was looking at their schedules right before I went on the air. So I am using that as my excuse because that's the only excuse I have. And then she also reminded me if I would mention this, and I am speaking at 2 p.m. on March 13th at the St. Peter Library. So if any of you are in that neck of the woods, stop on in. It's put on by the city of St. Peter, and it's just a fun thing. We'll tell some stories and hear some stories and answer questions. Whatever happens, happens. So we'll just have a good time, especially if you and you know who you are, if you're there. March 13th also will be after sundown. We can look into the western evening sky for a Jupiter moon kiss, they call it, sort of a conjunction. So that's, boy, you come and you're worn out at the library from listening to me. Go home, rest up, get up, have something to eat, and then go out and look at the Jupiter kiss the moon. So it doesn't get a whole lot better than that. The Waseca, I learned this at a meeting, you know, and everything you learn at a meeting is gospel. The Waseca Experiment Station planted corn in February, and they told me what day it was, but somewhere from there to home, I've lost a date. But
wait,
they planted some corns just to see how it works.
This year?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. What are they thinking?
Well, they just want to see. You know, it's not like they planted a whole field or anything. It's an experiment station, so they experiment on things. It'll be interesting to see. They'll probably get a good crop. I don't know how big a field it was, but I'll be interested in hearing what happens out of this. I think it's just a... things like that, you know, it gives you something to ponder from time to time. Because here we had the temperature, it was 70 degrees here.
Mm-hmm.
36 hours later, it was zero.
Yeah.
70 degrees to zero in 36 hours.
Well, this
cowboy would say that ain't right.
This certainly has been an odd year because I have online, there were videos of people water skiing on Lake Washington on Christmas Day. So, I mean, why not plant corn in February?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's there's some moisture in there. Brandon Brackey got a hold of me. Brandon's from Albert Lea, and he gave his son a toy metal detector. And I used to monkey around with metal detectors. It was a lot of fun. But he gave his son this toy metal detector, and it actually detects metal. Of course, it doesn't discriminate between a pop tab and a gold doubloon. It just says, yeah, there's something down there. And rust, I remember the first one I had when I was a youngster, it would rust, a rusty nail.
Oh.
It would just go berserk, and you think, oh, man, I found a complete Nash Rambler buried under there. You dig, and there was nothing. But he gave his son this toy metal detector for his birthday. And on February 25th, they were out digging around. He said earthworms everywhere, like 3 inches deep in the ground. They were digging up earthworms. So I don't know. Brandon's quite a fisherman, so they might have forgot about metal detecting and thought about fishing instead, probably. Mark Petrick from Austin said a friend of his, a friend and a neighbor, planted radishes on February 21st. And I'll bet they'll do okay.
Well, you know, yeah. Barb Lampson's husband put radishes out, but they have a cold frame, so it's, you know, one of those that with the big glass that warms it up. So
yep.
I don't know if your friend did that too, but that's okay to do if you got the cold frame. It probably will be working.
This went right into the garden, right into the ground.
Okay.
So, and you know, it might, they like it cool. So
sure.
I used to have cold frames and use those to get plants off to a good start and put a little straw or hay in there, and it was a great way to have a garden, that cold frame. And then I could keep some things going.
Mm-hmm.
I swear some years you could keep some stuff all winter long going in there.
Like carrots.
Yeah, And if the sun was shone kindly on you, that was a lot of the thing. Vicki LaRoon's saw a sharp-shinned hawk, and here are some, we talked about a lot of waterfowl last week, and I'm going to talk about some waterfowl this week. Chad Hines was in Watonwan County, and he was looking around, and he had binoculars, so he thought, why not look at birds? Now, I think Chad has those binoculars welded to his glasses. He saw white-fronted geese, Ross's goose, trumpeter swan, wood duck, gadwall, northern pintail, ringneck duck, lesser scaup, common goldeneye, hooded merganser, and common merganser. And these, you'll be able to see them if you can find open water. I had a few minutes yesterday between, it was one of those days where you have 79 appointments in one day, and then there's like a few minutes all of a sudden. So I went out, just looked at some water, and I think I saw everything Chad mentioned, except I did not see a common goldeneye, nor did I see a Ross's goose. Did see a redhead and a canvasback, though. Chad said in Blue Earth County he saw a redhead and a northern pintail. And Wayne Fetter, Wayne's a wonderful guy, was a teacher when I was in school. Wayne saw a green-winged teal in Faribault County, and I think green-winged teal are one of the most beautiful of ducks. They're just exquisite. And it's early to see them now, but stuff comes back, and waterfowl are one of those that can come back. If there's open water, they have no problems. Lori Payne saw a Eurasian tree sparrow in Heartland Township. I don't know how she could do that. I didn't see it. A couple years ago, I had one in my yard, and it was hanging around with house sparrows. They look very much like house sparrow, only maybe a little streamlined. And if you see a house sparrow and you say, boy, that just doesn't, there's something wrong with that one. It doesn't look quite right. It could be a Eurasian tree sparrow.
Hmm.
Bob Williams was in Le Sueur County, and he saw cackling geese and white-fronted geese. Andrew Nyhus was in Sibley County, where he saw cackling geese. Brad Abendroth saw a Townsend solitaire in Le Sueur County. Don Grusing said, nothing eats from my thistle feeder anymore. Hmm. House finches, goldfinches, pine siskins, Mensa juncos. What are Mensa juncos? Those are the ones that learn to eat from bird feeders. So then they're Mensa juncos. plus the usual suspect all go for the golden safflower. Even starlings have been there from time to time. I do put thistle in with a mixed feed offering I get from the bird store, which I put in a different feeder. I think the juncos eat it there and they consume the other offerings. The juncos go after it when I spread thistle on the ground, but not at the thistle feeder. New fresh thistle doesn't seem to change anything.
Hmm.
Of course, on these global warming days, the birds disperse, and I suspect some juncos will be taking the early winds north. Boy, they can make good time in some of these winds we've been getting off and on. Don says, I even saw the first brown creeper of the year. So the brown creeper looks like moving bark, moving up a tree, little brown guys, and they're really cool, and they like to fly to the base of a tree and then climb upwards. Last week, I babbled on about Flacco. Flacco is the Eurasian eagle owl. And I also talked about the deadly windows in Manhattan. New York celebrity owl Flacco died from a traumatic impact. Zoologists said that he reportedly flew into a building, with further testing was planned to determine if the Eurasian eagle owl may have been sick or might have got a hold of, you know, a rat that had been poisoned or something like that. But what happened in Flacco's final hours is top of the mind for his fans. He was no Taylor Swift, but man, he was right up there. He was more maybe Caitlin Clark-like. It was incredible, the following. They cheered him on as he defied the odds by fending for himself despite a life in captivity. So they didn't figure he'd know how to hunt. how to find a roost site. Well, he hung in there for a year. And the people are still seeking to arrest whoever let him out of his enclosure at the Central Park Zoo, again, a year ago. Flacco had been in good physical shape. They found he succeeded in catching prey, even though he had no experience hunting, because he came to the zoo as a fledgling 13 years ago. And according to the report released on Saturday, he weighed 4 pounds. Which is just slightly under what he weighed when he was at the zoo. So he was doing great. But he was found dead on the sidewalk after apparently hitting a building on Manhattan's Upper West Side.
Oh.
And this is the owl that was peeking in apartments and things. He was just saying, well, what do you have to eat in there? You got any? You got rats, mice, anything like that in there? So, no, I've never seen Flacco other than pictures, but... Boy, I'll miss him. He was cool. He was sort of the outlaw owl out there. And for a while, he was a superb owl, which is very close to a Super Bowl. So it was, I'm sorry he's no longer with us.
Speaking of that, you know, I really miss those eagle cams that we used to have all the time. Would it be about this time that they would be laying eggs again? I'm trying to recall from previous years when Money used to watch that. So I'm sure there's some on there somewhere that we could watch elsewhere.
Yeah, there's a number of them that you can watch. I think if you just go bald eagle cam, it'll pop up probably more than you ever want to know. I think it should be pretty safe, bald eagle cam. It shouldn't take you to strange and exotic places that you shouldn't be going. I think it's pretty safe, bald eagle cam.
I might do that.
Yeah, it is fun
fascinating.
To watch them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say it every year, it's a soap opera, what goes on there. You just think, how tough can it be a bird, free as a bird? You know, you have no problems, you birds, you just have it made. I have taxes to pay. You know, what do you got? Well, you got something probably trying to eat you out there. That's sort of a pretty high tax to pay. But the eagles, even though they're up towards the top of the food chain out there, they have concerns. You know, great horned owls hassle them. Raccoons bug them because that's raccoons' job, to bug everybody and everything pretty much. That's what they do. And they're good at it. So there's all kinds of videos where the poor mama eagle, she's on there just nodding off on the nest, and all of a sudden it's just, I don't know, like one of those horror movie things where it kind of darkens and you wonder what's going on there. And you can see the shining eyes of this raccoon that's coming up there. And I suppose it smelled food, probably. There's probably food in the nest, fish or something. And we've all seen that, I can't remember what building it climbed, that raccoon that climbed up that building.
Yeah, the tall building. And what in the world was he doing?
Yeah, he was amazing. He just climbed up, I think it was a she, just climbed up this wall, like a straight wall. Oh, my goodness.
Do you think there was food on the top? It smelled, a restaurant or something?
It seemed like it was just saying, I'm going to just keep going. I've gone this far. I'm going to keep going, whatever's up there. Poor thing.
Did they get it down or what happened? I don't remember what they did with that.
I think they did get it down. I don't remember how, if they opened a window up there and netted it or how they did that. I see the one that's in my yard now roaming around is a big male, and he's huge. I think he maybe would have had a little bit more problem scaling that wall like that. This was a smaller one, and very adept at climbing, as they all are.
Hey, Al, I saw your name in the Mankato magazine this week, and I told listeners about it. Your hummingbird picture was featured as one in the edition that they had a whole bunch of folks who submitted photos, and it was a very lovely picture of a hummingbird.
Oh, cool. Well, that's very nice to hear. I get Mankato paper, but I do not get the magazine. I don't know if it falls out before it gets here. You know, who knows what happens, but it always says there's the magazine.
And you couldn't find it.
But so I shake it, and there's nothing in there.
Well, it was in there, and it was lovely. And so since I'm talking about hummingbirds, did you see also this week in the paper where they're talking about building a hummingbird center over in the Nine Nature Center over in the Henderson, where they hold the hummingbird hurrah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's they put in so much work. They had way more meetings than but they got things done. And so there's so many people that are in there. I appreciate all of the good they do there. It's fun. I get to go over there and talk at those things, and well, they get such wonderful people to that hurrah.
You have some insight, I guess, because you have, while you said you didn't do a lot of the work, you had some advisory capacity with that. So just give us a little insight.
They said, "Do you think this sounds like a good idea?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." So they said, "Okay, you know, if it doesn't work, it's your fault."
Oh, geez.
I can move. If it fails, I'll just move somewhere and change my name. So it's, I think, oh, there's a number of them, but the one that comes just galloping to mind is Brenda Katosik. She puts in more hours. You know, if she was getting paid a minimum wage per hour, nobody would be able to afford to pay her. She just puts in that many hours. And again, there's a lot of other people. I don't mean to pick one out of the herd and not mention the others, but boy, Brenda is just, she's one of those amazing people that I'm just so happy to be walking on the earth at the same time as she is.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a national, I guess, attraction almost.
Yeah, I sure hope it is. Who doesn't want to see a hummingbird? You know, it's just people will wander around that garden just hoping to get them. They get incredible photos with cell phones, and there's people there like wandering around telling them all the information. And I'm there a lot wandering around the gardens and making stuff up when they ask me questions. And so it's, it's just a great thing that they've done this. And there was a Mrs. Hagen who kind of dreamed this up, I think, way back when, and had it in her yard.
Wow.
And now it's gone outside the yard. Sadly, she's passed away. So now they have this butterfly garden, and it's a big whoop-de-doo. I've talked to people from all over that come there. A lot of them come every year. They mark it on their calendars. So it's, you get to know those folks, and it's a lot of fun. But here I have house sparrows. You know, they're pretty good. I could have a house sparrow thing here in my yard around February. They just, they're singing. They just, as soon as it gets warm, house sparrows start singing. And just think about it, the earliest I could ever find about a house sparrow seen in Minnesota was a guy by Thomas S. Roberts, and he's better known as T.S. Roberts. He first observed a flock of house sparrows in Minneapolis in 1876. But a resident had a dozen of the birds brought from New York and released in his garden in St. Paul the year before, 1875. From 1875 in St. Paul, by 1876, they'd already moved to Minneapolis. That was just quite a move there. But by 1877, just a year after that, the house sparrow was established as a breeding bird in the Twin Cities. And it wasn't long where it was just everywhere.
Are they considered invasive then, since they're not native?
They are, yeah. And house sparrows, I see their nests a lot, and I know I've told this a lot. December 7th one year, we had an incredibly hot day, and a couple people were baling hay on December 7th. And I was up in the hay mow throwing down some hay, and here house sparrows were building nests in the barn. And I don't know if it was just a practice run or they said, "We're going to do this, and in case it just stays nice, we'll have it." But you can tell house sparrow nests a lot because they put trash, like plastic trash, cigarette filters. I tell them, don't be putting cigarette filters in, you know, in dry hay and stuff. What's wrong with you? But whatever's out there, they think that's, I suppose, natural fiber of some kind, and they throw it in there. Squirrels will do that, too, with the plastic. Discarded monofilament fishing lines are...
I've found that netting that some people use for erosion control as well, yep. And that stuff is really nasty for snakes. I know I used to use it until I caught some snakes in there and they died. Aww. And then I also saw that TJ, our friend, you know, talked about that too, because he would find a lot as they were landscaping and putting grass along roadways and things, how many snakes and other little things got caught in there. And so don't use that stuff.
No. The monofilament fishing lines, you know, I mean, everybody's using them, but just try to, if you snag it in a bush or something, try to get it out of there. Just don't leave it there, because it wraps around the beaks and the wings and feet of birds. And those six-pack plastic holder things are terrible, too.
Yeah, if you're going to recycle them or whatever, make sure you cut them so there's no loops that things can get caught in.
I almost threw one in the recycling without doing that.
Oh.
I thought we were going headed right straight to divorce court.
Oh, dear.
My wife caught me doing that.
It's, oh, my.
What are you? You thought I'd shot up the neighborhood or something. It's just, oh. So, she didn't trust me enough. She went and got a scissors and chopped it up. So.
Good for Gail. I applaud her.
I didn't have to worry about it. A listener asks, are wild turkeys native to Minnesota? And I still have my wild turkey here, Tula. She wanders around the house, not inside the house. Stares at the cat for hours on end through the winter. Our cat's indoors and Tula's outdoors. She appreciates us so much that right by my office door here, just outside on the deck, she leaves a nice, oh, how could I describe it? It's not like a regular turkey jay. It's a huge splat, I guess is what I would call it. And I don't see her doing that anywhere else. So I think it's just for me, I think, is why she does that. So I'm touched, really. Are wild turkeys native to Minnesota? You know, there isn't much evidence that they are native. And I know we all have, well, my grandpa said, his grandfather said he saw him here. Well, I'm a grandfather, and, you know, you can't always trust us on things. We mean well, I'll say that. If they did occur in Minnesota, they were extirpated by a combination of overhunting disease and unrestricted logging. And the state did release farm birds in the 1920s, 30s, and 50s. Hoping they'd adapt to the wild, and they didn't. In 1971, the DNR got, I believe it was 29 wild turkeys from the Missouri Ozarks. And I was in Missouri here not too long ago, and I got taught that I'd say Missouri or Missouri, depending on which part of Missouri or Missouri I was from.
Oh. And
I don't remember where I was supposed to be from, so I kept saying both of them. I tried to alternate them because I thought at least that way I keep like maybe 50% of the people happy.
Yeah.
But they got them from the Missouri Ozarks, and they released them in southeastern Minnesota, and the birds thrived and other reintroductions followed. I remember being in on one of those reintroductions, and they were drawing a line on the map, and they said where there's a winter-long snow depth of so many inches, there's no way turkeys can survive there. Well, they are way past it. They're everywhere in Minnesota. So they outdid what anybody expect, any human, I should say, expected from them. They are just thriving and doing well. And Tula, I don't know why she's here. She has turkeys that she should be off spending time with, but he just wants to hang around here and poop on those gigantic splats on my deck for, I don't know what you do, put up a sign and say. But, you know, I like her, and the first thing I get up every morning early, the cat and I go from window to window looking for her. And I can tell if she's out there, because then the cat just, she acts a little bit different way, like, yeah, she's there again, and we have to go look and stare at her.
What does she eat? Does she go to the bird feeders, or do you go somewhere else special for her?
She eats under the feeders because they're always dropping things. One of her favorite is, the woodpeckers come in and they'll hammer at the suet and they drop some things to the ground. And boy, she loves eating that. And the squirrels, I put out corn for the squirrels, and of course some of that ends up on the ground, and she eats that. She likes corn. She goes out in a field here that was corn last year, and she's out there picking away. So I'm sure she's getting that. And you know, there's some green stuff out there.
Yeah.
So it's people that use a cover crop like rye or something out in the fields. You probably were driving around this winter, and all of a sudden you look out and you say, boy, that whole field is green. What is that? And a lot of that stayed green all winter. So it's, boy, as we keep repeating, this has really been a strange winter. So she is finding apparently plenty to eat. She's seems to be a happy turkey. The cat, I think, thinks that she's getting bigger every day because the cat's eyes get bigger when she sees her. And she gets her exercise. She chases squirrels. She chases rabbits. She does not like starlings for whatever reason. And she seriously chases them. And then the crows. She deserves a special kind of hatred for the crows. And I think they call her names and tease her and pick on her. Aww. She flies. We have a big maple tree. And the crows are up in there. And there'll be four or five of them. And they're talking over. All of a sudden, the turkey gets a kink in her neck and takes off running and flies as high as she can in that tree, trying to get at those crows. And, of course, the crows just keep moving up another level of branches because it's a game of tag where they are never going to be it. So they just call her names, I'm sure. And it's got to be frustrating. So then she comes back and takes it out on the squirrels.
Will she attract a mate or anything? Because don't they usually pair up or not?
Yeah, I would sure think so, but we don't have any here in the yard. Maybe we can get one from the Missouri Ozarks and bring up here and say, yeah.
Here you go.
She'd probably chase him. I don't know that she's, but I'm sure very soon here, because, you know, they're already kind of, they're split up male-female flocks of various ages and kinds, and they're spending a little more time in the company of one another now. So it's that time of year where she should be thinking about that. And every day as a cat and I look for her, I say, well, she's probably just moved on. But nope, there she is again. So, hey, thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. And Karen, thanks for sending me that stuff on my granddaughter, Joey. She's
wonderful. She was named, was it the Outstanding Senior? Is that the title here at Minnesota State University? For those who don't know, she's the star basketball player on the team. She's not a real tall girl. She's a small, but she's a spitfire. An amazing, amazing job that she has done over the last year. And we wish her well because this is her last season.
Sadly, I shouldn't say sadly. It's her life. It's time, you know, do other things. But, boy, we'll, speaking for if I dare speak for her grandma and I, we will sure miss watching her. And that the NSIC award was something because it's a academics, community involvement, and an athletics combination of those. So thanks, everybody, for sitting on the front porch with us. You know, the weather, I think I'd call it uncomfortably nice sometimes. Being Minnesota, we say, boy, it's nice. We're going to pay for that someday. We just have to throw that out there. And the road was long. I was on my way to a meeting. Behind the steering wheel, I'm driving along. And, you know, I'm not a member of Sam's Club, Costco, or AAA. And why not? I don't have time for any more meetings. I've got enough meetings without joining those clubs. Plus, just today, I saved $569. By not going to Costco to buy blueberries. So I think that's very important, too. But on the way to the meeting, I'm out in the rural areas, and a driver just blew a stop sign, just never even slowed down, apparently didn't see it, just whoom, right through there, and, you know, your heart jumps up into your mouth, and I can't blame texting because I don't know if that's what she was doing. I watched to make sure the driver wasn't the White Rabbit from Alice in Wonderland singing, I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. Well, the driver wasn't a rabbit, but I strive to see the good. It was a good thing we didn't collide. And I was driving 1 mile an hour over the speed limit, you know, that digital, you can tell right where you are, and shame on me for that, but I'm thankful I hadn't been driving 2 miles an hour over the speed limit. That might have been enough for her to sink my battleship. Later, I drove past a burial at a rural cemetery. I doubt I knew the deceased, but I waved. I waved at everybody out there, everybody standing around. My father waved at tractors and barns in both support and sympathy. And I reckon it's a family tradition. I had to wave because I wasn't late. The White Rabbit would have been singing as he drove by. And when I wave, I lose the time to save. I guess a good thing, slow down a little bit and maybe notice a bird. Remember, Heartlanders, while we're driving past, do something wild today. Get out there and look at a bird. Karen, I enjoyed your company. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you, Al. We'll chat with you next week.
Perfect.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.